This is The Topic is Trek, episode 70, for Friday, June 10th, 2020. Coming up in this episode, James McAvoy is the captain now, it's Christmas in July, Stasis Box, all that and more, right now on The Topic is Trek. New Cool Ranch flavored Cerritos. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, The Topic is Trek. Engage already. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another thrill-packed action-adventure episode of The Topic is Trek, and I think I'm overselling it. So, let's get right to the introductions. Beside myself, Clinton, we have beaming in to join us, as always, is Mr. Craig Stepp.
Kiss my grits.
Still got to work on it. I think that one's taken.
Oh, keep going, dang.
Keep going after it, buddy. We have faith in you. We know you're going to come up with something good eventually. Okay. Only 70 episodes in. And Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
You look great, Captain.
Why, thank you. Oh, you don't mean me.
You have to watch the videos that we've included in this one. You'll understand where that comes from.
Very strange indeed. Socially distanced episodes of quasi stuff going on there.
Yeah. Good thing we're in three separate states.
Good thing.
State of insanity, intoxication. Yeah. It's the Tranya, folks. It's the Tranya.
We enjoy it very much. Well, everybody all set to go to Dragon Con? Oh, never mind. That's been canceled. Let's move on to something else.
So close to the sad trombone on that one.
Yeah, I know. All right, then in that case, I think it's time. I definitely think it's time. And we will get the word, definitive word, because I believe it is time to open up subspace chatter.
Oh, we can will it, can't we?
You don't need all that subspace chatter.
Charlie, you know what I get to say to you? Anyway, let's...
Oh, I didn't get that audio clip yet. Darn it.
We'll get that in there. We'll wing it for this week. Anyway, let's start off. CBS Viacom is adding 40 new shows from CBS and Comedy Central to its free ad-supported Pluto TV streaming service, including Star Trek: The Next Generation. Now, by sheer coincidence, the news comes just as rival network NBC Universal prepares to roll out its Peacock streaming service. Conspiracy theories abound. If you're not already familiar with Pluto TV, it's a free ad-supported streaming service that offers shows as, I call them binge watch type channels. It's also available. It's available online through most smart TVs and via phone apps. So you can get it pretty much any place. And acquired by Viacom for $340 million in January 2019, Pluto TV has doubled its reach since the acquisition to 24 million monthly unique viewers in the U.S.
Wow, doubling in 18 months. That's not too bad.
What I like in this article that was from Deadline is, I'm going to give you a quote from this article, and you can ponder this one all you like. It says that Pluto TV, quote, has become a fulcrum of synergy across Viacom CBS with curated versions of Viacom CBS channel and properties populating the linear streaming platform.
That doesn't sound like some marketing people spent too much time, did it?
Nope.
We get paid by big money for that
budget on those words.
Yeah, that was it. They spent $20 to buy Pluto TV, and the rest of the money went to, you're brilliant. These words are, they're so
fulcrum
big.
Fulcrum of synergy. Yeah.
Synergy.
There's a band name.
Indeed. Yeah. But what does it mean? Doesn't matter.
I've messed with Pluto TV. I thought it was pretty cool. I mean, sometimes there's some shows on there, or like you said, some show channels that are interesting from time to time.
It's a very eclectic mix. They do have a channel that runs MST all the time and a channel that runs Riff Tracks all the time. In addition to I don't know if they still have the James Bond channels. At one point they had a lot of James Bond on Pluto TV, but that may have been before Viacom CBS bought it, because that's a different, you know, studio's property, and maybe they, I don't know, changed it around. But yeah, they've got a Comedy Central channel that does, it's not Comedy Central, but they run specials and so forth from them. Hmm. So this may mean there'll be more Star Trek on there at some point, which that's good, because now they can push out some of that Star Trek, because we got new stuff coming in the door. So
well, they got plenty of stuff coming in the door.
That's right. All right. Well, we made reference to this earlier in the episode, which is way back, probably about 3 minutes ago. And Chuck is going to tell us more with the next story.
Well, it may not be the Star Trek appearance you were expecting from James McAvoy, but in a pandemic-weary world, it may just be the one you need. Mm. McAvoy, known for portraying the younger version of Sir Patrick Stewart's Professor Xavier character in the X-Men movies, was part of a team of stay-at-home actors who used their phones. I emphasize this because it's the way that when you're watching this video, it's all in that up-down phone format. They used their phones to create a Star Trek parody named Star Force. Mm-hmm. Sci-fi-salation. They took sci-fi and isolation, put it together, and came up with sci-fi-salation. All right. That was back in May. Now the team has released a sequel, cleverly entitled Star Force 2.
Wow, where'd they get that name from? Wow.
Not even like the wrath of anybody.
Yeah.
Joining McAvoy in the spoof video are Outlander lead character.
I believe that's pronounced Katrina Balf.
Okay, thank you. That's an interesting way of spelling Katrina, but thank you. Writers Brendan O'Rourke and Kevin Maynes. Balf's co-stars are on Outlander, Sam Heughan, I'll try that, and Steve Cree. A Discovery of Witches star, Teresa Palmer, formerly professional wrestler Mick Foley. Oh, that must be the big guy with the beard. And even James Kirk. No, not that James Kirk. A different James Kirk. So we have links to both Star Force and Star Force 2 over at the show notes for episode 70 over at thetopicistrek.com. I watched these earlier today. They are cheesy, fun goodness. You see somebody like toss something from one screen to the other, and it shows up as a not different item, but a different version of that same item.
So, yep.
Right.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. The two guys are walking towards each other, and they do the low shot of the boots, and you can see the toe kick or whatever on the floor.
Yeah, because it's shot in everybody's, you know, own separate houses, so there's like no consistency whatsoever.
Exactly.
With anything.
The instruments and equipment on the ship are things like a microwave, a washing machine. It's really, really fun to watch. And they do have minor special effects just to make you feel like you are watching a sci-fi show. But, you know, as far as the acting goes, it's fun to watch.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, I had not watched it. I'm going to have to go back and check it out.
The first one's only like 6 minutes. The second one's 12 minutes. So it's not like going to suck up your whole evening on this stuff.
Oh, okay.
Right. It's like, oh man, this is like the director's cut or something. It's a whole 12 minutes long. Come on. What's going on here?
It's not an investment like watching the animated series again, right?
Oh, no. We're getting to that.
Is that investment or is that it's investment gone bad, I think. Anyway.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Let's switch back to another topic. The topic is Trek, and Craig is going to tell us about something very, very, very timely.
Yes, and it's timely because I know everybody's wishing 2020 to go away, so this is all Christmas related. So now that the days are long and the weather is hot, it's time to start thinking about Christmas. That's because Hallmark is debuting their 2020 ornaments beginning in July, July 11th. And what would Hallmark collection be without the Star Trek offerings? Well, not much, but this year you can pick up three Mirror Universe characters, Captain Kirk, Lieutenant Sulu and Lieutenant Uhura for just $35 each. But wait, there's more.
Does Lorca qualify as a Mirror Universe character?
Yes.
Which one? In
collection. Did we see the non-Mirror Universe Lorca ever?
No. Maybe a bit Hallmark. Who knows?
I don't think yet. So anyway, that's another story. This year, you can also purchase the USS Enterprise Tree Topper. You heard that right. For a low price of, $150.
Woo!
You can top your tree with the TOS Enterprise. Plus,
we need a sound effect for crazy prices like that.
It'll blow you away. Fire! Plus, because all the ornaments are interactive. Let's face it, no ornament is worth your time if it isn't interactive, right? The Enterprise, Kirk, Sulu, and Uhura can all communicate with each other. Just press the Delta Shield remote control, sit back and relax, and listen to nearly 2 minutes of music and dialogue from the Mirror episode. It is truly the most magical season of all.
I don't know if you guys had a chance to watch the video of this thing, but I think it's a button you'll only want to press once.
Yeah.
To activate this thing, because it just goes on and on.
Well, like most annoying.
The longest 2 minutes ever.
Yeah, we had a singing snowman once years ago, and the batteries came out of that like 15 minutes after it was done, because the girl steps kept, Frosty the Snowman. I was like, oh, stop, please. Please stop.
So at night when all the ornaments came to life, when everybody's in the bed, he's like, oh, this one's not, he must have died. He's not supposed to be speaking anymore.
Aww.
Somebody took his batteries.
And I want to give a shout out to all the listeners who actually said, hey, these Hallmark ornaments are coming out. You might want to cover that. So I appreciate everybody alerting it to that, because I actually do not think that was showing up in my feeds of reminders about things for Star Trek. And usually that line is, you know, pretty popular. I mean, it's been going for ages.
Yeah.
So I'm surprised it wasn't showing up.
I've got some of those, and I've got some of the Star Wars ones I've been given over the years. I like them because they're small and they're detailed. Maybe not the tree topper, but, you know, they're small and they're detailed, and I really think they're cool. And now, oh, yeah, my box, I got a bucket that has, it's labeled desk pieces. It's little things I rotate, I'm put on my desk sometimes, or I'll put them up. And I had the Hallmark Enterprise 1701D, and the bucket fell off the shelf it was on. And I was like, this is not going to be good. Sure enough, the Enterprise is broken off the base. Yeah.
I blame Odo, you know, if it was,
I may have to super glue it and be very careful with it.
What's on Odo's bucket list?
Yeah, he is. Let's see. Bucket. Me. Got. Okay, there we go. All right.
Check.
Let's move on to a dream come true, perhaps for you.
A dream is a wish your heart makes. We've often kidded about everyone wanting to be on Star Trek Picard, but we know that you really want to be aboard the La Serena. Don't you? Don't you? Admit it. I know I do.
Uh-huh.
Well, this is your chance, as in part of All-In Challenge Star Trek Picard. They're offering one lucky winner a trip to be on the set of Picard, where they will see, where you will meet Sir Patrick Stewart and other members of the cast and crew. Plus, the winner will go to wardrobe and makeup. I love how they had Patrick Stewart on the video, and they said, not Rick Berman. Who's Alex Kurtzman?
Alex Kurtzman.
Yeah, he says, we'll make sure we take you to, you get your hair and makeup done. I'm like, wow, that must go quick for Patrick.
Don't
hair.
Anyway,
that's
I
because
get that reference.
If you win, you will get a walk-on role in an episode, making you officially part of Star Trek canon. Better still, 100% of the monies for this All-In Challenge will be, all the money that's raised through this sweepstakes will go directly to Feeding America, Meals on Wheels, World Central Kitchen, and No Kid Hungry. The contest ends, listen closely, the contest ends at midnight, I don't know what time zone, so you figure it out, July 22nd. And as of this recording, it's the 9th, we're going to get this out in a couple of days, maybe tomorrow, the 10th?
Still time, so, still plenty
yeah, you
of
got,
time.
Yeah, you got a few days, less than 2 weeks from time we record this, but hurry, you still have time. We have the link to the contest page over at the show notes for episode 70 over at the topicistrek.com. And I have entered, so nobody else should enter now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like no one else in the world should enter, just you?
I'm surprised you didn't refuse to read the story.
After buying my entries, I took down their site. How's that?
I see. I don't think that's how it should work for the charities, Chuck. I think you need to fix that.
Trust me, I donated enough for everyone.
Oh, I see. All right. Fair enough.
By the way, it's July 22nd, midnight Eastern time.
Okay.
Oh, there you go.
U.S. Eastern. Not like Australian Eastern.
Don't start.
let's move on, shall we? While we've been busy here at The Topic is Trek...
Ding.
There we go. reviewing the only animated Star Trek series ever seen. A new animated series has been lurking in the shadows, but the wait is almost over. CBS All Access has announced that Star Trek Lower Decks will premiere on the streaming service on Thursday, August 6th.
Oh, nice.
Subsequent installments of the 10-episode first season will also debut on Thursdays. Obviously, CBS All Access isn't paying any attention to the fact that we record on Wednesdays.
Dang it.
We'll now be moving. The topic is Trek is going to be moving to Friday mornings now.
Exactly. Yeah. And they're releasing, I don't know, they'll figure out something. Developed by Mike McMahon of Rick and Morty and Solar Opposites, Lower Decks focuses on the support crew serving one of Starfleet's least important ships, the USS Sorrentos. Ensigns Mariner, Boimier, Rutherford and Tendi have to keep up with their duties and their social lives, often while the ship is being rocked by a multitude of sci-fi anomalies. CBS also released a teaser poster giving us our first look at the USS Cerritos, the central ship of the show, and the poster featured the tagline, "Rarely going where no one has gone before." And the digital poster featured fold marks, making it look like a classic movie poster.
Kind of getting your fanzine.
Reaction to the USS Cerritos has been mixed. While some like the ship, others point out that there is no obvious way for the crew to go between the primary and secondary hulls. No. We aren't sure how this will be addressed on the show, but we only have to wait a few more weeks to find out. So that's the good news. Now, gentlemen, you've had a chance to look at the image of the Cerritos, and I feel like, you know, like it's Cool Ranch Cerritos or something that's going on. I don't know.
Frito-Lay is all in. They probably have stickers like a NASCAR sign on it.
What are your impressions of the ship?
Go ahead, Craig.
Well, I thought it was fine because, I always thought it was interesting some of the different ways that they design some of the TNG style ships, especially in when you saw them skip forward and at the finale of TNG, and they had
the third nacelle,
the Crusher, Crusher's ship had the, Picard's, her ship had the one nacelle at the bottom, and there's just weird designs. The Miranda class that Khan had, that was an interesting style that we hadn't really seen at that time. So I think it's fine. It's a cartoon, for crying out loud.
Yeah. I mean, I certainly don't mind the fact that it's a cartoon, and it's an interesting mix because it's kind of almost like a conglomerate of different styles.
Yeah. I mean, it's got a NCC 1701D saucer section looking.
Yep.
The bottom part is very reminiscent of the Reliant with the nacelles below. But again, the main engineering section with the deflector dish and whatnot looks like it was taken off of the D. It's got that kind of oval, semi-oval deflector dish in the center.
Which is the right time frame for that, because they're supposed to be right, you know, right in that date and time. So I can see that. I am puzzled. The first thing I thought of, though, was how does one get between the two sections of the ship unless one assumes that...
You have to walk through the nacelle?
Side-to-side
transport. Everything's transported.
Because there are two struts that attach the warp drive's nacelles to the saucer section, and you could make the argument that there are turbo lifts in there, but they lead directly to the nacelles.
Which is not where you want to be.
Although we have seen cases now, I think it was in Enterprise where they had to take refuge and they actually, there was a, like a walkway inside the nacelles where they sheltered themselves. Maybe because of the shielding in there. It's been a while since I've seen that episode.
Yeah. It's been a long time. Yelling at the screen, but.
So, I mean, sure you could, but that seems like a lot of effort to go through. I'm also fascinated by the part that underneath in the bottom section of the saucer, there's a different color flat piece. And I can't tell if that's.
Oh yeah. Like that.
You
gold,
know, what is that? What is gold that for? Section? Is that,
you're talking underneath the saucer.
Yeah.
Like a support. Piece or something.
Yeah, it's almost like something that flips open, comes off. Is it like the Delta Flyer that would be the captain's yacht, I should
say. That's an awful big captain's yacht.
So I don't know.
You met the captain?
This is the part that like when you unpack a laser printer, there's all those plastic pieces you have to take out. That's what it looks like. It looks like some sort of plastic strut that comes around from the back that clips onto
somebody
the bottom.
Somebody remove it. Somebody didn't remove the packing right. material.
Do not remove.
It's like, I didn't know I was supposed to take the plastic film off my phone. I've been using it that way for 3 years.
Yeah. It's a great anti-scratch screen. Like my car, after 18 months, my car still has that on the radio.
So there you go. Officially so we don't have answers to these questions, but we, as I said, we will find out in less than a month.
And well, actually, you might find out a little bit sooner.
I
don't see it in the show notes, but they announced today that Star Trek's going to have a pretty big presence at the Comic-Con at home.
That's right. So Lower Decks is going to be one of the panels?
I think it's, yes. I think it's the 22nd. You have to check on the date for Comic-Con at home. But yeah, they're going to have a Discovery thing, a Picard thing, and a Lower Decks. And I'm sure they'll be showing some, trailers for those episodes, seasons. Well, maybe not Picard, but, Discovery and stuff. So
going there right now. Okay. So we have Star Trek Universe, which is a virtual panel with all virtual panels, I'm assuming, Thursday, July 23rd at 10 a.m. And that's going to be the cast of Discovery talking about stuff, I guess, or, then. We're going to have Lower Decks and Picard. So it looks like that's all lumped in under one thing, the Star Trek Universe virtual panel. It doesn't say how long it goes to. Are they going to do all that within an hour? Well, I guess they've done multiple iterations of Trek on other seasons at Comic-Con, I think, in one panel. So it's possible this is all within 1 hour.
It may be. It's not right here. It was on the StarTrek.com and their news and updates, Star Trek Universe Comic-Con at home. I'll tell you what, I'll put a link to it in the show notes.
Okay.
So it'll be there. Star Trek Comic-Con at home, it says they're doing the Star Trek Discovery from 1 to 145 on. New York. Oh, New York Comic-Con. That's not the one I'm talking about then. Anyway. Never mind.
Okay.
It's a Comic-Con at home. They're going to be doing a bunch of Star Trek Universe stuff. Yes.
Right. And if you're out there going, oh, but I don't have a ticket to Comic-Con. If you haven't heard, Comic-Con, San Diego Comic-Con is free. The virtual event will be free. I think there are some things you can pay for because they'll be happy to take your money, but the panels should all be free online. I think they have their own YouTube channel.
Might be the first time I actually attend.
Yeah, they go, we've attended before, and it's going to be a blessing not to have to wait in the long line for Hall H. So that will be good. All for that. All right. So I'm sure this will make Charlie happy, but it's time to, oh, wait a minute. It's not quite time to come back. Not quite time, because I want to remind you that we covered all these stories, but yet we have an additional 52 stories. Thank you, Eric, that you can check out in the show notes for episode 70 over at thetopicistrek.com.
I'm sorry, but that whistle, when he did that, I swear I laughed out loud. I had to pause that thing.
Well, we have that soundbite that will live forever for us. And in Vulcan, Alberta, Canada news, by the way, there's no new news yet as Vulcan is still dealing with the very earthbound pandemic. However, the town's recreation department released a video for Canada Day, which featured a singing of Canada's national anthem and various shots of life in Vulcan. Spoiler alert, Star Trek features prominently. And you can
you
check
don't
that
say.
Out. Yes, you can check that out in the show notes as well. All right, now it's time to come back from subspace chatter, appropriate sound effect. Very appropriate. And time to head out on our main mission.
What, you want another one?
Yeah, sure.
You are in error. Okay.
All right, I guess I don't want another one. Sorry. We're continuing our review of Star Trek, the animated series. Now, what is Star Trek, the animated series going to be known as after there are more animated series?
The original animated series.
Star Trek, TOS, T-A-S?
TOS. Yeah, it's something like that.
Very confusing. We'll have to see how that all shakes out as we go along. All right, our first episode up is The Time Trap, written by Joyce Perry, and it first aired on November 24th, 1973. A synopsis of the plot, sent to explore the vast Delta Triangle, a veritable Bermuda Triangle in space, where vehicles have disappeared for centuries, the Enterprise encounters three Klingon ships. Hostilities commence. First a Klingon ship, then the Enterprise disappears into a pocket universe, where both discover a utopian society of cooperation comprising over 100 races in trapped space.
Derelict ships floating around randomly.
Yeah, well, you know. Both newcomers are welcomed to join, but must refrain from any form of violence. Kirk's involved, so you know that's not going to go well. Newcomers are whatsoever or suffer a harsh penalty. Only together can the Enterprise and the Klingon ship escape. But the Klingons have a devious additional plan in mind.
Dum, dum, dum.
Ooh.
When they tell the Klingons not to be violent, it reminded me of the episode, a two-parter on Next Gen, Gambit Part 1 and 2, where they were finding that Vulcan artifact to do the psionic weapon, and they get to the end, and Picard says, "Don't anyone think any violent thoughts," and Worf is standing there. Good luck with that.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
Don't think any violent thoughts.
A few fun facts about this episode. It marks the very last smooth foreheaded version of Klingons we will see until the Trials and Tribulations episode of Deep Space Nine.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah.
And many of the graveyard ships were unapproved designs for the insectoid ship seen in the very first episode of Star Trek, the animated series, Beyond the Farthest Star.
Mm-hmm.
So recycle everything when you get a chance to.
Yeah, didn't we see one of those aliens sitting there?
We did. We saw one of the aliens that we'd seen earlier.
The asparagus guy.
Yes.
That's right.
But it struck me as very odd that you have this, you know, like all through time and space, all these different aliens, and yet there's a Vulcan, and there's an Orion,
Andorian, and there's a Telluride.
Yeah. Paradise City. Remember Paradise City from Star Trek V?
Yeah, pretty much that.
Wait, I didn't see Star Trek V. We should watch that.
No, we shouldn't. No, never again.
Just don't and say you did.
Not on my watch.
Yeah.
Well, what did you people think of The Time Trap?
I watched that in the previous batch, so it feels like it was a millennia ago. I ended up watching 13, 14, and 15 this time around, so I don't have notes on that. I will jump right to the punch and go, right up there with the rest of our animated series. The explosions in space and all that good stuff. What was the Klingons had an ace up their sleeve. They planted
a bomb. A pill.
It was a bomb the size of...
She might as well have taken her chewing gum and stuck it under the thing.
Right. And they were supposed to find it before they went to warp after escaping. So they had to work together. This was good to see the Klingons and the Enterprise working together to escape this. Meanwhile, in the Utopian society, they're all naysayers. Yeah, we all tried it too. We won't ever get away. I don't think they're going to escape. Blah, blah, blah.
Short like, dimension.
It won't work. It will never work. I thought it was all right. I thought, one of those moments I was like, what in the hell's wrong with Spock? Because he was like, it's good to be working with you guys. I'll be around with him.
Well, that was intentional. So he could stick him with a tracking device or whatever it was.
I know, but I was just like, what? But he did it like twice.
Wouldn't it be nice if we all went to church together? Bro, Spock, you've been smelling the spores again?
Yeah.
There was also some weird stuff in there where, speaking about special effects, you have when the Klingon ship disappears at the beginning of the episode, it just fades out. It's like everything's gone. I figure that must be a commercial break. And suddenly you find out, no, the episode is still going. And that's the ship like going into the other dimension. And they talk about the wavy effect and all the stuff that happened to the Klingon. There was none of that stuff. It was just a picture of the ship and it faded out to black. And it was just very, very strange thing going on there.
Where were all of these races meeting? They looked like they were in some grand hall. Was that one of the ships?
I have to assume because there was no planet or anything. Planets.
There was no stars. It was just a bunch of ships hanging around.
My thought was, okay, I figured it was a ship or one of the, like a station or something. But my thought was, okay, if time's slow there and they've been living there for a millennia, why would you want to live on your own ship for that long? Wouldn't you want to go find some place to walk around?
What did they eat?
Yeah, because I'm wondering their sources were going to be depleted if they didn't get out of there really fast to get back to our dimension. Yeah. And I'm thinking, okay. Are these other ships without any power? If so, how is anyone breathing? Why are there lights on? What is the atmosphere and stuff? Are you sure you want to do that? I couldn't.
Nobody had any children.
Logistics work.
I guess Joyce Perry didn't go that deep with the Bible in this episode.
Yeah. Well, it's always the problem when you talk about you go to this dimension where time means nothing, and you have to think, well, they exist. They're existing moment to moment. Therefore, something's going on, and how does that all work? I didn't really, so that your ship, and you're having a conversation with Kirk, and the Klingon, and they're doing stuff to get out of there, so that there's a thing happening that's going to take some time to prepare, so that's time. How long is that actually taking? And if it takes a long time, and they get back to our dimension, then have millennia passed?
Exactly. That's what I was wondering. When they came back, how much time actually passed? Was time passing at the same rate in both places?
One may never know.
It's a cartoon.
makes your head
hurt. How many licks does it take to get to the center of millennia?
We may never know. Or three, whichever.
Yeah, three.
Do you want to rate it now or wait till the end?
No, we'll wait till the end. We'll save that bit of fun for the end.
800.
Yeah, my goodness. The Quatloos. All right. Next is the Ambergris Element. And this was written by Margaret Armin. First aired on December 1st, 1973. And a synopsis of the plot. The Enterprise investigates conditions on planet Argo. Currently, a water world whose previous dry world history matched events about to befall an identical, a nearly identical Federation planet. Kirk and Spock encounter the native sea-dwelling Aquans, who save the pair from drowning by transforming them into water breathers, but otherwise want nothing to do with them. Kirk and Spock seek to reverse their transformation before a devastating earthquake strikes, which requires the capture of a sea monster. That's badly phrased. The earthquake does not require the capture of a sea monster. Their transformation back to not being aquatic creatures requires the venom from a sea monster. And this has stopped making sense a long time ago. All right.
The whole episode right. Stopped making sense a long time ago.
Fun facts, man. This tells a lot as well. Margaret Armin also wrote the animated episode, The Lorelei Syndrome, as well as the TOS episodes, The Gamesters of Triskelion, speaking about Quatluz, The Paradise Syndrome, and The Cloudminders, three of Trek's finest. A couple of the swimming animations of Kirk and Spock were trace overs of the swimming sequences for Aquaman. And this is why Spock frequently seems to be drawn as smaller than Kirk, because it was just using that same animation.
By the way, that's kind of appropriate that it was trace overs from swimming on an animation from Aquaman for the,
yes,
they swam just like Aquaman, arms out in front. Really fast. Yeah. Bubbles all over the place.
And James Doohan voiced six characters in this episode.
Wow. Mm. I was wondering where a lot of the characters were the voices were coming from.
This is the first. Yep, go ahead.
Was it this one or maybe the last episode? Maybe it was the last episode we were just talking about. I think Nichelle Nichols must have done a couple of voices too.
Yes, yeah. She did. She did, in the previous episode, she did four voices.
Because they went from... I don't think that's her strong suit is voiceover, because it sounds like she just changed her voice.
Or she either goes a little higher.
A little softer, are maybe. From the planet of the third moon.
It's like, yeah, there's Nichelle. And
Majel, well, George was doing he was in that last episode, he was doing one of the Klingons, and he just talks very formal.
Right.
The same way he normally talks, but very formally.
Wow, that Klingon's got an English accent.
Majel's voice is very distinctive also.
Oh yeah, it is.
This is the first and last time we also see the Aqua Shuttle and the Scouter rig that they use on the planet, so we know that they've got them, but they don't use them for anything else.
We do see the portable atmospheres again, though.
We do. I was surprised when they showed up. Yeah. I didn't remember that.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. What was that? I'm trying to remember what episode. Or maybe it was a Slaver Weapon. The one where they're in the shuttle. It looks like a hot rod version of the shuttle we know.
Yeah, that's the next episode.
This one's more of a watercraft.
Yeah, it's like a little skiff
that they have.
Carried around in case we need to go on water somewhere.
There's some good things that I noted in this one. There's a when they get down there, they said anyone, they're looking for Spock and Kirk and the lost watercraft, and one guy yells out, "I see some rocks."
Gee, thanks.
Yeah, thanks. Helpful over there.
Yeah.
Then they do find them, and Kirk and Spock have been transformed, and they take them out of the water. And Kirk starts saying, "Can't breathe," and I was reminded of recent events. They put him in a tank on the Enterprise, and they're showing this panel, and I don't know if the graphics got a little off or something, but it was in all caps. One of them was labeled pressure, only the second R was missing, like, the leg. So I said, "Press soupy." Like, what?
I thought it was very strange that, you know, he's in there and Kirk goes, "I can't command a starship from inside here."
But
I'm also thinking, well, great way to be inclusive in the Federation. Right. You know, if you're a water breather, I guess you can't command a starship. You know?
Yeah.
There was one point where Spock says,
"No kidding.
There is much less activity there." And I'm thinking, what activity? There was no activity he was referring to. Again, with the wonderful editing on this show, people referring to things that either got cut or didn't happen or were supposed to happen. And it was one of those comical moments going, what are you talking about, Spock?
I also like that the elders were just very much like, You can't do this. We're going to do it, Pops.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can't we do anything without
we didn't do it like that. We won't do it.
Can't we do anything without checking the ancient records?
Yeah.
Everything was about the ancient records.
Yeah, that one guy's like, can't we do something? Yeah, I was like, wow, just give up.
He's a rebel, that okay. one.
So they fire the phasers at the planet as this earthquake is breaking out. And they move the epicenter to the North Pole. That's not a good idea. Because they say, oh, well, we're moving it to the North Pole where it's uninhabited. Remember the beginning of the show where they showed up and saw nothing inhabited? There was no life forms on the entire planet. And then they get attacked by this giant sea eel. And they also find this whole civilization of people under the sea. Your sensors suck. I'm sorry, but just because you move the epicenter to the North Pole and say, well, that's not inhabited, you probably just killed about 10,000 people.
Whoops.
Oh, it was?
Yeah, what? It's where awkward. All the air breathers had retreated to.
Yeah. Right.
Because it was frozen up there, and the water breathers didn't go up there, you know. So
it's the only land left, ice.
Oh, it seemed like the two water breathers at the end. They were the two males. Seemed like they were convinced pretty easy to help capture the sea serpent.
Yeah, we can't do it, but we need to. Okay.
Yeah.
To heck with the ancient records.
Yeah. Somebody turned them pretty quick.
Also, is it cool to just kind of arbitrarily bring these people up to the Enterprise on the bridge and show them, you know, stuff?
Well, Picard did it from time to time. This is your planet.
Picard's done it from time to time.
I don't know. It seemed like, was that necessary? Did they need? I mean, there was no real need.
Not in this case, no.
They went from the depths of the ocean to the stars.
I see. And just now think about that, the entire wiped out civilization at the North Pole. All right. Anyway, Santa, no. Let's move on to our last episode.
Written by none other than...
The Slaver Weapon, written by Larry Niven.
If you can believe that.
Yes, that Larry Niven.
It was the actual original title of his story. I took a note. It says, based on the story by Larry Niven called The Soft Weapon.
Yes.
So if you want to go read that as a reference, be my guest.
So the synopsis is, Spock, Uhura, and Sulu are on a shuttle en route to Starbase 25 to deliver a slaver's stasis box, an artifact from a long-dead civilization. On their way, the box signals that another box is on a nearby ice planet. Once there, the crew is captured by the Kzinti, a feline race intent on returning to dominance within the galaxy. The Kzinti hope that the artifacts hold a means to do that. Now, the fun facts here are, at the request of Dorothy Fontana and Gene Roddenberry, science fiction legend Larry Niven wrote the episode based on his short story, The Soft Weapon.
Oh, there you go.
He was at first reluctant to include the Kzinti, as the race appears elsewhere in Niven's known space universe, but eventually he thought it would be interesting to see what others might do with the characters. So essentially, he's kind of saying they're part of the Star Trek universe. To simplify the storytelling, Niven was given clearance to leave crew members out of the story. He is quoted as having said, I was given permission to leave Kirk out. The stripes on the orange Kzinti characters, which are in Niven's stories, were left off, as animating that additional detail would be expensive.
Because they spared no expense on the rest of the episode.
Now, the death of the Kzinti marks the only time characters die in the animated series.
Hmm.
And the Kzinti ship and spacesuits are pink because director Hal Sutherland is colorblind. He probably assumed he was looking at a gray tone.
Find time to find out.
You know, it's like Barbie's dream Kzinti in this episode. It's just very, very, very strange. So this was an interesting episode. I mean, this is basically old school Trek in the sense that you have someone who's hardcore sci-fi writing an episode for Star Trek, in this case, adapting a story, and with mixed results. The soft weapon has different circumstances. It doesn't actually have the race known as the Slavers, but something similar to that. And so the plot does not follow along exactly with what we get here. But the key thing for me is, and I went back and I jotted down just because I said, man, that's got to be a lot. In the first 5 minutes of this episode, they say the word stasis box 16 times.
Yeah, it was a bit excessive.
To find the stasis box, you need another stasis box.
And, how was the first stasis box ever found? Well,
we found one. We found a stasis box.
They went to Stasis Box R Us.
Yeah,
I don't know. I think that given the limitations that we've found out that the animated series clearly has in terms of its scope and its limited animation, I thought this was a fairly decent episode, but I feel like it could have gone further, but this is probably the best we're going to get out of an animated episode from this series. I don't know. What did you guys think?
Well, we still have some episodes to go.
Go ahead, Craig.
I kind of enjoyed it a little, probably wasn't my, I take that back. I think I liked it all right. It seemed like Spock was phoning in the performance or Leonard Nimoy a little bit on this one. Just seemed like he was distant. Maybe it was the last episode, when they were in the water. But yeah, it seemed like he was phoning it in a little bit. I did like seeing just Spock, Uhura, and Sulu, and not necessarily everybody else, like even Kirk. So I thought it was a nice change to not necessarily include him. And I wasn't sure, but I thought this is one of those instances, maybe I just wasn't paying attention at first, but there was two red shirts. But I don't remember two red shirts being on the planet with them early on.
There were two red shirts?
Yes.
Was this another mistaken instance where Kirk somehow slipped into a red shirt and then the guy's gone?
That's what I was thinking.
I didn't notice that. I might have to go back and watch it.
Because there's only the three people.
Yeah. Right. But when who was on the ground? I think it was Uhura was on the ground. There was two red shirts looking over him. I'm like, wait, where'd they come from?
I'll have to go back and check that out.
I'll have to go back and check it out. But yeah, that was a little weird.
Yeah, something that I couldn't go back and find the instance I should have jotted down at the time is one of these three episodes, it's a close-up of Kirk's face on the bridge.
Really close up.
His mouth is moving, but it's Sulu's voice.
Oh, I didn't notice that. I was caught off guard by the several of the close up Kirk half off the screen. It's like just get half of his face and they just change out the background on some of these scenes. Like, what is going on here with the camera work?
Yeah.
And in this episode, we talk about it's based on Larry Niven's book, The Soft Weapon. The main focus here is that the Kzinti do open up the stasis box, and they find in there are a couple of different things: a piece of meat. They
still
find
fresh. A picture.
They find a picture of
what could be a slaver.
We have no idea. It could be a slaver, although we have our suspicions after we know what's going on here, and a handheld device that has a slider on it. And as you slid that to different positions, the device would actually change into different things. It turned into a telescope at one point. It turned into something that gave a high-pitched sound that only some people could hear, and it kind of mildly disturbed them. So they speculated that it was a weapon to use against a particular species that neither of these groups were. They found one that was a little interesting. It was like a nuclear device. It would shoot out and just giant explosion would come out of this handheld device.
And Sulu's reaction,
the ground in front of him.
Sulu's reaction was, "We can't give him that." The thing I found disturbing about this testing phase of this device was they would slide the slider on the handle. They'd slide it to, you know, whatever position, and they'd show the close up, and it would animate to, you know, a cylindrical. They'd pull back to the full shot of them holding it, and it was a completely different shape. Every time.
Oh, like, yeah.
This one's got a gun sight. They hold it up, it's got no gun sight. Like, what? It was crazy. They also had a little inconsistency pronouncing the Kaczynski's leader's name. It started out sounding like they were saying Chucked Captain, but later Spock is saying Shuffed Captain. Like, make up your mind, would you please? Mm-hmm. Get the readings right on these scripts. I did like the fact that Uhura had a good line. She says, "I've heard all Kaczynski telepaths are neurotic." Well, he certainly fits the bill. This guy's mangled and hunched over. Well, they were all hunched over.
They all look tired, especially him. He's like, ugh.
Yeah. There was under his fur. Yeah.
There was one, you know, most of the Kaczynskis kind of sounded like this. You know,
not the old one. Don't make me.
One random one that sounded like he just got off of his top 40 DJ list. You can't miss him. Suddenly he comes in with his big booming DJ voice. Like, what the heck?
This is my real voice.
They said they needed a voiceover for this actor. Do you know what you're supposed to be acting?
To be a cat, I hear. Yes. I do the same voice for everything, so this is my cat voice.
And poor Uhura, she got beat up twice.
Yeah, she was like, you know, taking a pounding.
A punching bag on this one.
We did get to see the personal atmosphere one more time, because they were out in this cold, and at one point, they flipped the switch on this thing, and it turned into what Spock called a reasoning computer. And I'm thinking they just picked up a Google Home or an Amazon Echo. I really honestly expected that cat to be going, Alexa, show me the weapon setting.
Yeah, stupid.
And I apologize for anybody whose machine was activated by that just then.
Oh, yeah.
I do that on purpose. Yes.
Add catnip to my shopping list. Yes, exactly. So that is the thing we find out, is that this actually appears to be a spy's weapon. And because of all the questions that this Kaczynski captain is asking the weapon, Spock theorizes that, you know, it's going to assume that it's been captured by the enemy.
Yeah.
And so it's going to do something to remedy that situation. So sure enough, they slide it to the setting that is supposed to be the weapon that's the nuclear weapon.
The dual funnel, the one with headers on it.
Well, the headers one that was the thing that flew them around the room?
No, that was an earlier setting, but the final setting looked like air horns on a semi-tractor trailer or something.
So, of course, the crew realizes that that's not the same weapon they had before, but the Kaczynski had not seen what it looked like, and it is indeed a bomb, and the whole section of the Kaczynski ship is ripped away.
Yes.
Which is those deaths that we talk about. That's why I think that we found out that the meat was poisoned.
Was it?
And
how did you know that?
They say that in the episode. They examine the meat and it was poison. And my guess is the photo inside was the intended target
of the
slaver who had that. Because
could have been
all things that like a could have
been the spy. Could have been the spy taking a selfie. You know, because one of these settings on this device had to be a selfie cam.
Could have been the spy spouse. You know, always take a picture with you.
Oh,
there.
Honey.
What got me though about that is that here it is. This is the slavers who had basically conquered the galaxy. This was millennia ago,
like a billion years ago, something like that. Yeah. It was a long time ago.
And apparently, they printed out 8x10 photos.
Well, you know,
you know,
wonderful.
I kind of wonder what the technology was of the other races, you know, because if they had their technology for making pictures is too far too advanced for us. We surrender.
You captured our images. Our spirit.
Our souls. You stole our soul.
You stole our soul in that image.
Alrighty. So we're now going to rate all three of these episodes on a scale of 1 to 10.
I was so ready to talk about the next episode because I watched those three.
Well, it's a race against time, you realize. We have to get through with these episodes before we start talking about the next animated series.
That's right.
Oh, boy. Okay.
But I think it will work out just about right. You know, we may have to gang up a couple near the end to make sure that we've cleared the docket, if you will.
We wouldn't want to leave any cash on the table.
Well, absolutely not. Not with this quality gold we've got here. Speaking of quality gold, we've got the time trap. Now, on our scale of 1 to 10, let's see. I will start this time with, I'll start with me, just to give you guys a break for a second. The time trap, I'm going to rate that a 4.5.
Wow. Okay. I mean, that's interesting.
I liked it, but I thought it had a lot of flaws to it. I liked the concept, and I like, you know, the fact you had to have the Federation and the Klingons working together. But there were so many things like the lack of imagination of who are the aliens that are in there, you know, and the bad special effects of the ship disappearing and the bad special effects of coming out of that time, you know, vortex. And so I think things distracted me from rating it higher. And I think I really would have wanted to rate this a bit higher, but I said 4.5. How about you, Chuck?
Oh, you were much more generous than I was. I saw more holes in this thing than a screen with door. So I only went as high as a 2.5.
Jeez. All right. Now we get to find out which way we're going here, because Craig, what do you say?
I'm going to agree with you. I'm going for 4.5 because pretty much the same reasons that you said. You know, I thought it was an okay story. I like seeing them dealing with the Klingons. Yeah, there was holes and stuff, of course, but I liked it.
Okay. So not too terrible on that one. Now let's move on to the ambergris element. So we're going to swing around the opposite direction for this underwater adventure. Or maybe a question mark. No air quotes, just a question. A question mark. So, Craig, we'll begin with you.
Okay, this one was probably my least favorite. So I'm going to give this more of a 3. It's because, I saw Kirk's webbing disappear twice.
Yeah. And then he went scaling.
Yeah, and then he was back in the tank twice. You know, McCoy wasn't very cooperative. Just didn't seem like he would agree with anything that
he was his usually unconfident self. Oh, this should work.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So, what'd I say? 3?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm about 3.
All right. How about you, Chuck?
I am going to rate it the same as Craig. 3. There were just a whole lot of things like, the captain and Mr. Spock have been missing for 5 days. 5 days? It's what? Come on.
Once again, your sensors suck on this ship. Yes.
Hey, computer, where's Captain Kirk? He's been missing for 5 days off the ship. Whoa,
did anyone else notice on the animated series how big the logos on the shirts are? They're like way oversized. They're not the size of your traditional, you know, Starfleet insignia, the Delta Shield. They're like 3 times the size of what they would be in real life. I don't know if the artists were just...
Yeah, we can make them smaller, but that's going to cost more. Oh, make them big, make them big, make them big.
And make them pink and purple.
Yeah.
All right. And I will rate this. I'm going to go a little bit lower than you guys. I'm going to go 2.5 on the ambergris element.
I did hear McCoy say ambergris, and I've only seen this word in print when reading Moby Dick, of course, but I don't know what the true pronunciation is on this word. Is it ambergris or ambergris?
I thought we heard it twice, 2 different ways.
Well, the next, just like Chuffed Captain and Shuffed Captain.
The consistency on the show, top quality. And the nice thing is about that, we'll never have to speak of that name again because we're moving on and we're never looking back on that episode. All right, so we move on to The Slaver Weapon by Larry Niven.
Who's first on this one? You went first on the first one. Did Craig go first on another one?
Yeah, you go first.
I'll go first. Okay.
Your turn.
I actually like this one the best, and I think, Clinton, you summed it up well when you said, this is about as good as it's going to get. We've got the writing of Larry Niven. We have no Kirk on the episode. There were a number of holes in this. I agree. I was really disappointed because at first I thought they're saying Chucked Captain, which is almost my name. You know, if you put the Chuck and the T together, went, that's kind of weird. I give this one as good as it's going to get. 5.
Ooh, man. Wow. All right. Let's see. So we'll go to me next.
Yeah.
I'm going to rate this one a 6. I liked the fact that we had one race and we were just dealing with them and their background, you know, kind of like how the Kzinti, how they react to things, you know, what is their civilization like, how they think about other races, what their motivation is for what they're doing. They have a background. And of course, it helps that Larry Niven had worked out all this stuff ahead of time. But still, we get that sort of information. We get to hear the word stasis box 16 times within the first 5 minutes. You'll be dead before the first 10 minutes is up.
Band name, Stasis Box.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I found it intriguing, your plot device of the weapon itself. You know, what is it? Why is it doing all these different things? And Spock working out that logic of, you know, well, it's probably going to do something that we don't want to be around for, type of thing. So I thought it was well crafted in a lot of ways, despite some of the flaws in it. And what about you, Craig?
I'm going to agree with you as well. I'm giving it a solid 5 because I enjoyed this one. I like the idea of the, you know, the slaver stasis box.
Stasis box? Did you say stasis box?
I said stasis box.
Stasis box.
And the weapon that they were dealing with. Although, they kind of blew themselves up.
They blew it up good, real good.
And what were they all doing standing in one spot? Wasn't anybody like below decks on the ship somewhere?
Hey, everybody, huddle for warmth.
It's cold out here.
But I want to see what happens next.
Leave everything to me.
Yeah, they give it a solid 5.
All righty. Well, there we go. We move on from here next time to the next series of 3 episodes, and then I'll work out the math to find out. Actually, we may have to do more than 3.
I think we have to do more than 3.
Yeah,
we might have to do 4. 5.
Hey, I will say though, watching all these animated series, I know they're not all the writing's a little off here and there, and it's got some quirks like we talk about, but it's the concepts I kind of like. Not necessarily the episodes themselves as much as I think I like these kind of weird concepts, like with the Kzinti and
the walking plant,
that kind of stuff. I would like to see that with live action. I know a lot of that wasn't possible with technology they had in the day.
Right, yeah.
Right.
But I love the concepts that they show in here.
And ironically enough, it's still the same issue in a lot of ways, because no matter how you slice it, when you have a sci-fi series that goes on the air, you have very few, and this is I won't speak for every single series, but for the most part, very few non-humanoid characters because it's expensive.
Sure. Oh,
yeah. So just as it was expensive, back then it was expensive and hard to do. Now it's easy to do, but it's still expensive.
Yeah.
You just get Doug Jones. He'll take care of everything.
Yeah, just take him. And by the way, one thing I did not add when we were talking about the episode, the ambergris element.
Mm-hmm.
And remember at the end when Kirk and Spock are talking to him and they kind of stop with Kirk had that stupid grin on his face.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Once again,
it was awkward. He was showing some teeth too.
All right. Time to come back from that painful main mission. That's all we have to say about that. And it's time now for our warp speed roundtable. So last time around, we asked...
Oh, we have to use the warp engines.
The table spinning.
We got to use the warp engines.
Whew.
Yeah.
It's got me.
So what are we doing this time?
Well, this time around, we are asking... What setting would you add to the slaver weapon? Now, we know we had all those different settings. We talked about the telescope and the laser weapon and the very deadly weapon, and it was also a bomb. You've got all those things on the slider. But clearly there are things that must be missing from the slaver weapon. So if you had the ability to add another setting to the weapon, what would you add? So I will turn first to you, Chuck. What would you add to the slaver weapon?
Oh, this one's easy. I'd make a karaoke microphone.
Oh, God.
I just want to hear those Kazindi. I'll have a blue Christmas without you. I think it'd be a lot of fun.
Oh, Captain, please don't. It hurts my head.
My cat-like ears are bothering me.
Yeah.
sounds like someone strangling a cat.
Very sensitive in our business. They can't swing a dead cat in here without hearing a statement like, oh, I'm doing it myself now. All right.
Well, I would add something I think is clearly missing from that, a screwdriver. Okay. They don't have a screwdriver on
the
damn thing.
A sonic screwdriver. Let's cross the streams.
Just a regular old screwdriver. Just, you know. Now you have to. Now you could have two settings: one for a flathead, and one for a Phillips head. So you might take two settings for that.
Multi weapon or a tool.
What about you, Craig? What would you add to the slaver weapon?
Well, I would add a setting that would make an ATM machine just dispense money.
A spy would need that.
Yeah. See. And money just starts flying out.
Well played.
On some alien planet, you low on cash, you just take that thing out.
And pull into quarks and latinum just flies everywhere.
Well, you don't want latinum flying everywhere because it's going to hit you in the eye, and then that's not a good fun time. Well,
it could be strips and slips. You don't have to get bars.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
That's true. Yeah.
All right. But we've also put the question out to you. What other setting would you like to see on the slaver weapon? I also thought about, could have a bottle opener and a salad spinner. Both of those would work as well. But anyway, so you can leave us your thoughts on that. We'll have the contact information in just a moment. But for right now, it's time to refill the dilithium chamber and try to warp on out of here. You can find me, Clinton, at Comedy Forecast, all one word, with the number 4.com. You can also find me on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook, also as Comedy Forecast, all one word with the number 4. You can find me on MeWe. I'm also doing a daily Monday through Friday series right now, probably wrapping up before the end of July, called Morning Extinction, where I do talk about things, read stories, show different things from collections that I have, talk about weird news, all sorts of strange things going on in that. So you can check that out. Instagram Live, 10 a.m. Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday. Also, I port it over to IGTV where you can catch it anytime. Just look for Morning Extinction or Comedy Forecast. All right. But who speaks for you guys?
I'll speak. I'll speak for us.
Oh, you're speaking again.
Is I, Chuck Captain. You must search.
I want you to do it in that voice.
Search for chuckchat.com, Technorama Podcast, in your favorite search engine. You can find it at chuckchat.com. Go there now.
The here. I also invite you as a pet
like
project
a on there, Chuck.
I can do a better Klingon than that.
No, from one of these episodes, it sounded like one of those Klingons.
It's the same four actors, dude. That's like, I know. You only get so much repertoire on that. As a fun project, if you haven't already checked it out, Saturday Night Karaoke on my YouTube channel. That's kind of where that whole karaoke idea came from for the slaver weapon. It was just too easy. I'm sitting right here. Why not?
Yeah.
All right, but it's time to hit the theme, boys.
Already.
If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic Is Trek. Visit our Facebook page or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic Is Trek,
don't put on the red shirt.
The gold shirt?
The slaver shirt.
Oh.